Okay.
Okay, I wanted to thank everyone for being with us. Again, thank our sponsors. Oh, yeah, so I wanted to thank everyone for being with us and thank our sponsors, the Schefters. Again, also there are two anonymous sponsors who want to be anonymous. I try to encourage them to be non-anonymous to incentivize even more sponsors remain anonymous, so thank them anonymity. Also, say hello to our many followers on Facebook. We're streaming this simultaneously on Facebook and on Zoom, so it's great to have you all. I think Rabbi Simon doesn't need more introduction as just someone who it is. Incredible pleasure and treat, really, to us, the Shashuai, they say great with that. If your Torah, without your Torah, my plaything, Azavadati Goni, we'd be lost. And learning from Rabbi Simon, I can say, at least personally, but I think for others as well, is just a treat and a delight of the purest kind. And so we're grateful again to you and your family for being with us. I guess I'll just say one word by way of hakdama, of introduction, that the Shlach Kadosh mentions right at the beginning of his commentary on Shavuos, that even more than other holidays, before Shavuos, it's there's an extra inyan, an extra idea of everyone immersing in the mikvah, because of that's what we did before Matan Torah, before everyone was pure for Kabbalat Torah. And so this year, I think, you know, not just women who are struggling to figure out how to safely go to the mikvah, but even for men before the holiday, who mikvah isn't okay, there are more Hasidish men, suddenly everyone goes to the mikvah all the time, it's great, but it's harder for everyone to go to the mikvah, and many men aren't as well, so hopefully by learning tonight with you, Rabbi Simon, we'll have some extra kium in the same way that Rabbanos and reciting them is maybe learning them is a little bit in place of bringing, so hopefully, I don't know, it's a kavanah I'll offer, but with that gratitude, and we'll start this year.
Okay, Rishus the Bar Dasra, Rabbi Dallinger, Zechad Nishmas Avi Mori Yaakov Ben Yisrael Pinchas, Daniel Shainabas Yoshua Falak. I'd like to thank the anonymous sponsors and Dr. and Mrs. Schechter sponsoring it, and Dr. Schechter mentioned last week, which I neglected to mention, we'll mention now, that really he would like to dedicate it in memory of all the people who passed away in COVID-19, and it should have an Eloi Neshama for all these individuals. Okay, last week we discussed some of the ideas of the construction of the of the mikveh. And this week we'll discuss more about the tevilah in the mikveh, going inside of the mikveh and some of the halachas regarding that. And again, feel free to speak up if you'd like to ask anything. I'd be happy. It always makes the shiur more interesting when people interject and get to hear what's on people's minds, what people want to hear about. So it's always encouraged. I don't like just to give a lecture, but I always like to hear what other people have to say. So the tefillah, the halacha of immersing in a mikveh, is a very important concept, that it's a kol gufo, meaning one's entire body, and in every strand of hair has to be immersed below the water in the mikveh. In other words, it's not like other areas in halacha where we might say rubo kakulo, that, you know, the majority is enough, etc. Here, the entire body and every strand of hair has to be immersed below the water, below the water level in the mikveh. And if one strand of hair or any other part of the body is not totally underneath the water, then the tefillah is invalid. So that's a very important point. And therefore, since this is such a important concept and idea, that's why the poskim point out, and Rav Abadie in his Sefer writes, this is the main reason, which I'm going to say right now, is that we have a mikveh lady. That the idea of having the mikveh lady to be there, the main point is to make sure that the individual is totally immersed. And totally, I mean totally. Not 99.99, but totally immersed, the whole body, all the hair has to be, every part of the hair has to be underneath the water level in order for it to be a valid tevilah. And that's something that it's hard to be sure unless you have another person looking on. In certain situations where somehow, and that's a real halacha. In other words, we don't, you know, sometimes it comes out that women say that they don't want a mikveh lady or things like that, and that's not really an acceptable approach, because, and Rabbi Akiva Eger has a whole tshuva about this, because the tefillah might be invalid, you know, because if you're not... You know, being looked on, you know, it could be a strand of hair, could be above the, you know, the water, and that would make it invalid. The Noda Behuda has a tshuva in certain difficult situations, that to allow the husband to be that mikveh lady in a situation where the you know, mikveh lady is not there, they're going to be in some place where it's not happening, be in an ocean, whatever it may be. It's not the preferred way, but in dire situations, the Noda Behuda is willing to permit the husband to be the one looking on. So that's a very important point in mikvos, you know, that the whole entity, the whole person has to be underneath. Where we know that there's a din of tefillas kelim, when you immerse a kli, a vessel, in the mikveh. The same idea, that the whole thing has to be immersed in the mikveh. However, that is the idea of the person being submerged in the water. But then we have another halacha, and that is the halacha of chatzitza, which means that nothing could be on the body that will obstruct water from touching that area of the body. So if one has something that's on the body, and it's really, as far as the Torah is concerned, it's a chatzitza min haTorah if it's on most of the body, and it's something that you don't want to be there. But the bottom line is that we hold that even in part of the body, and you don't want it to be there, so then that is considered a chatzitza. In other words, you have something that's on your body, and it's displeasure for you, and you don't want it to be there, but some, you know, and so you have to have it removed. You have to have it removed. Some type of dirt or something like that has to be removed, and that is the dinner of chatzitza. And this, you know, that's what. And not only does this apply to the outside of the body, but the inside, the mouth as well, requires that even though a woman is not opening up her mouth when she's going into the mikveh, the water is not rushing in, but it has to be in potential fit for water to have come in, even though it's not coming in actuality, but it has to be able to come in potential. And therefore, sometimes you can have, the Gemara speaks about it, you have a bone that gets stuck between the teeth. So that is considered an invalid tefillah. It's only a part of the body, so maybe it's only invalid rabbinically, and that's why we tell women that that's why they brush their teeth before the mikveh, because we're afraid that there could be something there that's really not supposed to be there, and it's bothersome, it's etc. And that's the idea of ro'i l'bi'as mayim, that it's not enough. So outside of your skin, outside, it has to have the water actually touching there. Inside, it has to have potential to touch. In other words, had your mouth been open and the water would come in, it would touch all the surface areas. So then that's the same thing has to be here as well. The same thing has to be here as well. So sometimes somebody could have something inside their mouth that they have, you know, they could have some dental work. So if the dental work is fine and you're happy with it, then fine. But if it could be something that, you know, you're uncomfortable with, and it's because it was put in wrong or something happened in the course of time and you wanted to have it removed, so then that would be considered a makpid, meaning I don't want it to be there. I don't want it to be there. So if I don't want it to be there, so then I could... so then the halacha is that it has to be removed before you go to the mikvah. Sometimes when people floss, everybody's of the opinion that brushing the teeth is sufficient, but sometimes people have the minhag to floss. So you floss, and a piece of the floss gets stuck between the teeth, and you feel uncomfortable. So that's the example that Rav Abadi gave, that would be your makpid, meaning you don't want it to be there. And therefore, until you get it out, the woman can't go to the mikveh, because that's called miut hamakpid. Makpid means you don't want it to be there. Because now... Also, in order for something to be a problem of chatzitza, it has to be something you could feel. You could feel. If you can't feel it, say you have a pen mark on your skin. So, l'chatchila will try to get rid of that pen mark. But if you can't, so if you would put your finger there, and you if you could feel it, then it's a problem. But if you can't feel it, if I would close my eyes and there's a pen mark there, or something there, you know, discoloration in my skin, and if I'd feel it, I close my eyes and feel it, I wouldn't be able to feel it, then that would be considered a, if I'm not able to feel it, that would not be considered a problem. That would not be considered a problem. And And then, if something is there for beautification, in other words, sometimes people do put things on their nails for the beautification of their nails. So our practice is that we try to remove everything as a stringency before we go into the mikvah. But for some women, they just did their nails and it's beautiful, blah, blah. And, you know, if we're not going to let them go in, so then we'll follow the Iker Halacha. And the Iker Halacha is that that if it's for beauty, for noi, even if it has substance to it. We said if something is on your skin, like a pen mark, and you can't feel it, but it's not lanoi, it's not for beautification, just the opposite, it detracts, but you can't feel it, so then that's not a problem. But if it's for beautification, even if you could feel it, then it won't be a problem. Again, preferably we try lechatchila to take away everything, all types of obstructions, but you know, but lamaisa, for some women, you know, it's difficult for them. In other words, so then for them, in other words, obviously we wouldn't let them do something that's halakhically problematic to get them to go, because what's the point? We wouldn't say, well, oh, I can't put my whole head in the water, so we're not going to say, okay, that's good enough. No, that's not good enough. That's like not going to the mikveh at all. But the bottom line is that that if she had her nails done and it's very and it looks nice, and otherwise it would be difficult to have her go to the mikveh, so we can follow the strict halacha, which is that if something is for beautification, then it would not be a problem. The Rishonim have a discussion, what about a ring, right? Women wear rings, you know, so what about a ring? Is a ring a problem? So, because the ring is for beautification, right? But the opinion of the Ravid is that since if she would need dough, she would take off the ring because the ring, you know, she doesn't want to get all dirty. So then, so that would be a chatzitza, even though right now she's not needing the dough. But if potentially she would need the dough, she would want to remove it, then she has to remove it even when she's not needing dough. And that is the opinion of the Ravid. Sometimes we have situations where women have like a cast or a bandage of sorts. They cut themselves or things like that. And sometimes it could be very, you know, a couple of weeks, a month, you know, it could be. So this becomes a very important question of whether that is a problem, whether one could go to the mikveh or not with this type of bandage. Because the Mishnah says in Mikvos that a retia, if you have a bandage on your bruise, so that's a problem. Even though you want it there now, but normally you don't want it to be there, because, you know, but here, under the situation you are now, you'd like it to be there, because you will have to get it healed. But nonetheless, in general, you don't want it to be there. So some poskim are of the opinion that it's no good. You have to wait it out. That you can't go to the mikveh if there's some type of bandaging on your skin. There are other poskim that say no. That as long as it's not a bandage which you're constantly removing back and forth, but it's there for a certain period of time. Because you need it there until that it gets healed, and you could immerse yourself. You see, if you can't get it wet, then even if it's there for a certain amount of time, and you're leaving it there for that whole certain amount of time, so as we see that if you leave it there a certain amount of time, and you're not taking it off every day to put ointment and put things. It's there. You're not changing it. It's there for, and you. But it, two things has to be. It has to be. It's there for whatever amount of time you, it has to be there, and you could get it wet. In other words, you can't say, "Well, I can't get it wet, so I'm going to take a plastic bag and put it over this cast or this thing." And then Tovel, that's no good, because the plastic bag, soon as you leave the mikveh, you don't want the plastic bag to be there. So the plastic bag is not considered subordinate to your body. It's only if you have this thing, call it a cast, call it a whatever, that's on your body, and it's there now for the duration of the time that the healing process needs, it's there, stuck there. Then that's considered part of your body, and that would be okay. Now, not everyone accepts this opinion. There are some achronim that say, no, you can't be anything there. There can't be anything there. Just like the Mishnah says in Mikvos, that reti al gabi makaso is chotzeitz, that it's a chatzitza. But others say, no, as long as you can get it wet, and you're not changing it, and it's there, and you need it there, so then it's okay. And different poskim have a whole different ways about this matter. I once had a situation where a couple, I follow the shita of the achronim, Rav Abadi holds this way, I follow that if it's there, and it's functional, and you need it there, and you can get it wet, so even though it's going to stop the water from coming where this bandaging is, but you're not taking it off. It's there, you know, it's like a full thing that's there for the duration of the time of the ailment. So then it's okay. But not every mikveh, I once told the woman she can go, but then the mikveh didn't let her go. You know, some mikvehs have a different policy. Some mikvehs say, as long as you have a rabbinic permission, then we'll let you go. Other mikvehs say, no, we have our rabbinic authority, and that's the one person we go to. And if our rabbinic authority accepts, fine. If not, not. So I sent them to the mikveh, and their rabbinic authority didn't allow her to go. So, which I respected, because, again, I'm not claiming that this shita, this lenient opinion, is the only shita there. So they have a right to argue with this opinion. But then, on the other hand, I have a right to send her to a different mikveh, which we did, and she was able to be tovel there, because in halacha there could be different opinions, like a lot of areas in halacha, and just because there are different opinions, you know, respective opinions. That does. I always like to point out, doesn't mean that every opinion in the world is acceptable. There's certain opinions that are not part of the halachic framework, and then, you know, you can't accept it, but it's not, people always have to realize that it's not, you know, my way or the highway, as they say, the expression goes, because there could be more than one valid opinion in a halachic discussion. So that was a situation where a woman had the situation, and I didn't even realize they were even newly married at the time. Okay, but if it's improper, it's improper. It doesn't matter that they're newly married, but it happened to be they were, so they were able to go to a different mikveh whose policy was that as long as you have rabbinic permission, then you could go. Okay, are there any questions? And anyone wants to bring up any issue and something so that we discussed so far today, or even from last time, or something we didn't even discuss yet? I'll briefly open the floor to anyone who would like to raise anything, and then we'll go on to other areas.
I have a question, Rabbi. I don't know if anyone else does, so I'll let others go first if they do.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll ask. Say we were in a time where there was a men's immersion that was required, not because of some minhag or midas chasidus or kabbalah or whatever, but from that, so halachic point of view, like while we were, you know, all doing Tumantara and the Messianic era or something. Would men also require, in that case, like a shomer or someone to make sure emerge men, whatever, or not because they don't have this long hair? Like, is it a thin hair, or is it, or would it be up? Is there any? I'm curious. It's a little bit of an irrelevant question.
Right. It's irrelevant. It's hard to say because you're asking, today men go to the mikveh, but it's, you know, they have a concept of men going to the mikveh, but it's not a requirement today. He's asking when the time where going to the mikveh was a requirement for a man as well, meaning when people were involved in Tumah V'Tahara, they were going into the Beis HaMikdash, and then they just came in contact with a man, and he might have been Tameh. So then men had to go to the mikveh, you know, halakhically mandated to go. So he's asking, would they require a mikveh man, you know, to watch, you know, him, or is it only because women have longer hair? I don't know. That's something that I never thought about, but I'm glad that you raised it. Because today, there's men go to the mikveh, that's a meritorious thing, but it's not a strict halacha anymore. So for sure we don't have a man overseeing men going to the mikveh. Did they ever have it then? I don't know. I have to look into that. I've never even thought about that, but I appreciate you raising the issue.
Also, because, I mean, now people go to Harabayas sometimes, which is his own controversial thing.
Right. Yeah, people go to Harabayas, yeah. I never went to Harabayas, to tell you the truth. There are people who go to Harabayas, and, you know, what can I tell you? You know, and they claim they know which is the problematic parts and which is not. Shlomo Goren wrote a whole book on the Har HaBayis and others. Okay, so that might be a relevant issue of that. But to me, it's a big controversy, and you know, it's not like I have such a need to go to Har HaBayis, so I'd rather just leave it out there. Okay. Tvila is another aspect of tefillah that sometimes people don't realize. You know, that one is not allowed to be tovel and standing on a vessel, because a vessel is mekabel tumah. So they can't, because we're afraid if you're gonna stand on it, you might come to stand in it, and if you. One of the halachas of mikveh is you have to be tovel. You can't be tovel in a vessel. It has to be tvila bakarka. So you're tovel in the mikveh. The mikveh is in the ground, or it's attached to the ground. But if you're gonna take a barrel and you fill the big barrel up, and then you're gonna be tovel in that. So that could be a invalid tefillah because of the mayim is in a kli. Now, as we mentioned last time, that you can't even have water that was once in a kli that was emptied out. But certainly, even worse than that, is to take a kli, put the water in the kli, and then you go into the kli, into the vessel. That is improper because that's not a mikveh at all. That's a zero. Whereas so there is a halacha that people don't realize, that if you would be tovel in the mikveh and say, you know what, I have this great idea, just like when we prepare people take a shower, what do they have? A shower mat, right? They have a shower mat. People don't want to either they have, you know, stand on the floor of the shower, so either they have, you know, Crocs or something like that that they wear or something like that, but or they have a shower mat that they put on the bottom of the shower. So a shower mat You can't do that by a mikveh. You can't say, well, I mean, tovel, you know, in the ocean, or tovel in a regular mikveh, but I don't like to stand on the thing. I want a mat. So that would be improper. Because you're just like you're not allowed to stand on a vessel, so too you're not allowed to stand on a mat. If it's anything that is makabel tuma, which we assume a mat is, you know, could be susceptible to, impurity, so one could not be tovel. Even though one would have thought, based on all the rules I gave you, that you're not, there's no chatzitza here, everything is fine, I'm just standing on the mat. And the answer is that standing on the mat is like standing on a vessel, on a kli, and that, according to some shitas, would invalidate the tefillah. So that's something, usually if you go to a private mikveh, then they're not going to let you bring in your own mat, or something like that, especially, if the lady's there checking, she's not going to let you do that. But you never know in a situation where a person could be being tovel in the ocean or something like that and say, hey, I have a great idea. I'll put a mat down and I'll go on top of that. So that's something that could make the whole tefillah invalid. Even though I'm totally immersed and there's no chatzitza, but that's another halacha, that you can't be standing on something that is susceptible to impurity. You can't do that. So that's another interesting halacha. Tevila, going to the mikveh, is at night, right after the 7 days of finished. And so then one goes to the mikveh after the 7 days at night. But sometimes it can be very inconvenient to go at night. I always give the example that the week before Pesach, someone will call me up and say that their wife's mikveh night is the night of the Pesach Seder. Now that's like the worst night in the year to have to go to the mikveh, because the whole, maybe not this year, because this year people weren't getting together with their family so much, but on a regular Pesach, everyone's there. The whole family gets together from all over for the Pesach Seder. And now she has to say, oh, I have to excuse myself, I have to go someplace. It would be very embarrassing. So in certain communities, they'll let a woman go to the mikveh in the daytime, provided she won't see her husband till the night. So they'll let her go, say, in the Erev Pesach scenario, it would mean that she would drive to the mikveh. The mikveh lady obviously has to be there to watch over her. She would drive to the mikveh in the afternoon, and she would go to the mikveh, and then the time she comes home, the man has to be already out of the house, go to shul already, and when he comes back, it's already past nighttime. So now this could be very helpful in situations where people can't go at night, like they're going on a flight to Eretz Yisrael, and they have to be at the airport. So it's very difficult. So in certain situations, in certain communities, they'll permit this. Some communities will never permit it. Could not never permit her to go in the daytime. Because, you see, what's the problem of going in the daytime? So one problem is that going in the daytime, we're afraid that if she'll come home, she'll go in the daytime, say the seventh day, she'll let her go in the morning already. Why can't she go? We have a concept of sometimes of mixtus hayom kikulo, that, like if somebody's sitting shiva, they get up in the morning. So why don't we let her go? So we're afraid that she'll go to the mikveh in the morning, and then she'll cohabit with her husband, And then later that day, on day seven, she'll see more blood later. So retroactively, she didn't really finish her purity process. So therefore, we don't want her to go. Only, perhaps, according to Rabbi Natan, according to Beit Sham explained, if we'll be guaranteed that they won't be together until nightfall. So one way of guaranteeing it is that they're not in the same house together until the night. You know, so therefore, the time she comes home from the mikveh, he goes already in shul, and the time when she comes home from, and he comes home back from shul, it's already night. So that would be. We're only afraid that she should be there. They'll be together in the daytime on day seven if she goes in the morning or earlier, and then they'll cohabit, and then later in the day she'll see more blood, and it turns out that the nida didn't finish yet, and he cohabited with a nida. But if we could make sure that they can't be together. So there are different ways of making sure. One way of making sure is that they're not in the same house together until nightfall. Another way of making sure is that they're only together, say, in a public area. Say, for example, the example I gave you of the airplane ride. They have to catch a flight. So, but she needs to go to the mikveh. So she can go to the mikveh and they'll meet up at the airport, even though they can meet up in the airport before nightfall. But since in the airport there's no place that they will be possibly being able to cohabit, so even though they're going to see each other before nightfall, that there's some poskim, based on emotion, some poskim hold that would be okay in that situation. You know, in this COVID-19 situation, the situation was difficult for this thing as well, because normally we say she'll go to the mikveh, Erev Pesach, and before she gets a chance to come home, he goes to shul. But if there's no shul to go to, so then she's going to come home, he's still home. So then he would have to, as people were saying, he would have to take a walk or go in the backyard, you know, something like that, because normally it's a given. The wife will go to the mikveh on, you know, Erev Pesach, in the afternoon, and by the time she gets home, he'll already be in shul. That's assuming people are in shul. And this Pesach, where people were not in shul, things were much more difficult in that regard. And then there's another halacha that even on day eight, we're afraid that you can't go in the daytime, because we're afraid that her daughter will see that she's going to the mikveh and think that you could go anytime in the morning, even on day seven, or whatever, and that will lead to erroneous conclusions. Okay, but so in general, the idea of going to the mikveh is only at night. Sometimes we have shilas of women who are nurses and they have night shifts, and they're not going to be able to go to the mikveh the whole night. So that, if you rely on the heter we said before of Rabbi Natan, the way the Chacham Tzvi explains it, then she maybe could go to the mikveh day seven before the night, and then go right to her shift. And then she's not going to come home till the next morning. So they weren't together that night, and that would be another possibility. But again, not all these heterim are accepted by everyone, and different communities have different ways of dealing with these heterim. So, you know, every mikveh has a right to have their own policy of what we should allow, what we shouldn't allow. As I told you, a lot of mikvahs have one or two rabbanim that are in charge of the questions that are raised in that mikvah. And some say they allow other opinions to be factored in as well. Another part of the preparation of the mikveh is cutting the nails. Cutting nails. So, so So you're supposed to, the minhag is to cut nails for several reasons. One reason is to make sure there's no dirt under the nails. So if the nails are longer, it's hard, you know, it's more likely that dirt will accumulate. And another reason that's given is because when you cut, even before you cut the nail, since you're planning to cut the nail, so it's as if it's already cut already. And therefore, that'll be a chatzitza because it's cut, but it's still there. So it's stopping the water from getting to the new surface level of the nail. So the big question is, what if it's Friday night mikvah and the woman forgot to cut her nails? So the shach is of the opinion, so you'll get a non-Jew to do so. And the... And the Taz disagrees. The Taz says, because since to cut the nail, you need two people. You need the goy, but the Jew also has to help along by prostrating the nail. So that could be considered helping along with the action of the malacha, and that could be a problem according to the Taz. And the Shach says, no, there's no such thing. The only problem, time it's a problem, says the Shach, is if somebody's cutting off your payas, and then you're moving to help them do so, that's a problem on the active participant. But in other areas of halacha, somebody's cutting your nails, a non-Jew, and you're aiding by putting out your finger, that wouldn't be considered a Torah prohibition. Just recently, just this night, somebody called me up. They have a rabbinic position in the shul, and they wanted to maybe, once the shul opens, they want to know, they were thinking of taking everyone's temperature before they come into shul. And it's an electric thermometer, so that, as this person said to me, you know, maybe it should be a problem because the person who's the temperature is being taken of might have to, you know, tilt themselves a little bit to aid with the, you know, and according to the Taz, that could be a problem. So we discussed that issue. Okay, so that is the other part of this. Again, any questions that anyone wants to raise, please feel free to do so. Yeah. Okay. So let me tell you. Oh. Now, there is a question of the following. In certain communities, it might not rain. It might not rain. So, where are you going to get the water from if it doesn't rain? So you can dig, but maybe they won't find water underneath. So the question is, could you use mayim she'uvim, water that was in a kli, and then freeze it, and then melt it? Because do we say that if you have water that was in a kli, it's mayim she'uvim, but now you froze it, now it loses its status of mayim she'uvim, so then when it melts, it's okay. So this is a discussion of the poskim. Some poskim permit it and some poskim don't. So some were of the opinion that in certain communities they can use ice for their mikveh, meaning melted ice, meaning that even though the ice was once in a receptacle when the ice was created, but since you froze it, then maybe freezing causes the ice to lose its status of mayim she'uvim, and then when it melts, it comes back. So this is the quickest way of building a mikveh, because usually a mikveh you need rainwater. But say the rainwater, like I told you the story last week, that's one of my talmidim, but it's funny. I'll tell you, the janitor emptied out the mikveh. And then, because he thought, he didn't mean maliciously, he saw there was a bunch of dirty water there. So even though that was the part of the mikveh that people don't go into, because the other, you know, and then there's the hashaka hole that we discussed last time. Recently, someone called me up the past week to say that they're from the, they're now the Rav in that community, and recently the same thing happened. The same thing happened in the past, that the janitor, you know, emptied out the mikveh. So the question was, so that how do you get a new mikveh? So it has to rain, but it doesn't rain overnight like that. You know, the amount. So the quickest way of building a mikveh is getting what? Getting tap water and just freezing it and have it melt melt in the mikveh. And therefore, once it's frozen, it loses its status of mayim she'uvim. And then when it's it melts, you know, so that's the quickest way of building a mikveh. You don't have to wait till it rains. You just turn on the faucet. And then you get your water, freeze the water, and have it melt. So, and that is a big machlokas, whether that is a valid way or not. If it is a valid way, then it's a... So Rav Nachum Rosenberg once told me a situation of a certain Rav in Eretz Yisrael in a certain community where mistakenly the water was collecting on the roof of the mikveh, and by mistake it was entering some receptacle and then going into the, so it became mayim she'uvim. They didn't realize that all the water that was coming into the mikveh that was pristine rainwater was really like tap water. The whole mikveh was tap water because there was some kli, some vessel on the roof of the mikveh that the water was going into before it went into the pipe. There's not a vessel. So Rav Nachum Rosenberg said he spoke to Rav Avadya Yosef. So you tell them to go to another mikveh, but they're used to this mikveh. They're not comfortable. They might not go if you make them go to a different mikveh. You know, there's comfort considerations. Like someone recently called me up that they're afraid to go to the mikveh they usually go to. Because they're not sure, are they taking the restrictions of COVID-19 seriously enough? It's very, you know, people, you know, so Rav Avadya Yosef permitted to be somech on this, that the situation was that the mikveh was no good and they needed an overnight mikveh. So how do you overnight me a mikveh? Overnight me a mikveh. How do you overnight me a mikveh to take the she'uvim, freeze it, and then have it melt? And that would be, so according to those shitas that say that's okay, that would be the quickest way of building a mikveh. But not everyone accepts that, those shitas. So Rav Avadya Yosef permitted B'shas Hatchach to rely on this freezing thing. But he said only until, you know, the rain season. Once the rain season is, then you should get yourself a real mikveh with real rainwater, not this kuntz with water that was frozen and melted, etc. That's called she'uvim shehiglidu. Like we know in modern Hebrew, glida is ice cream. So even though we don't call ices glida, but usually ice cream glida with modern Hebrew. But in rabbinic Hebrew, higlidu means it got frozen. So if it got frozen, then it loses its status of mayim she'uvim, according to some. According to others, it doesn't work according to everybody. But sometimes, some communities, they rely on this, especially if there's a community that it doesn't really rain there, so they have to import ice, you know, and then the ice melts, and then you know, they use that hetter. But that's a good thing to know about. Yeah. In a situation where somebody might, you know, it's not for the consumer, but for the Rav, or, you know, to realize and to consult with the mikveh construction expert to discuss that possibility of she'uvim shehiglidu. That my she'uvim that was frozen and then it got melted. Okay. So that is another part of this discussion. Does someone want to ask something?
Maybe.
Yeah.
About a comment earlier about a kli and the mat. So I've been having a discussion with a couple of people. There's a sort of ongoing debate, theoretically, about, I'm not saying you do, I'm just saying what Rebbe mentioned last time about the rabbi in the West and the tap water mikveh. But the issue is, not forget the tap water for a moment. Say someone would make a mikveh out of their bathtub. Like, is the tub a kli?
Right, so the tub may be considered a kli, because...
Or is it not because it's, it has to be attached to pipes, and therefore it's mechubar la karka, it's like fundamentally...
Right, but we have a thing that if something... You see, the tub was a kli before it's... In other words, it's not built into the ground. You understand? You know, there was a shita... That, you know, the Marsham originally, when they were first using plaster, you know, that he considered that if you have plaster, you dig in the ground and you put plaster in, he said, oh, that's a kli, because theoretically you could take the whole plaster out and you'll have a box. So the plaster is so that was a big chumrah of the Marsham. But the bathtub, certainly, because the bathtub, you manufacture the bathtub, and then they bring it to your house, and they put it in your house. It's not built into the ground. So even though it's mechubar l'karka, but since it existed, it's called chakako ulavasov kovo, that it first was formed into a kli, into a shape, and then it was put in the ground. So even though it was put in the ground, it still doesn't lose its status of a kli. So going into a bathtub might be a violation of being tovel in a kli. And tovel in a kli is much worse than Mayim Shuvim. Mayim Shuvim might be only Dirabonim, because the water was once in a kli, but now it's not in a kli. You took it out of the kli. It's no longer in the kli. But here you're being tovel in the kli, and you're being tovel in the kli, so that perhaps is a psul daraisa even. So that's why we wouldn't go that route. And that's so when people are looking for other avenues to go to the mikveh. As I said, the best avenue is to have a good upkeep mikveh, that has the proper chlorine and proper, taking care of it. And so some mikvos, as I said, are emptied out tap water more often than others. And so whichever way we could expedite it to make it, usable, because I've seen the different ways who people react to the whole COVID-19. Some people just are paralyzed, literally paralyzed. They don't want to do anything, they don't want to go anything. And they say, this has been a very big avenue for psychologists. This is like field day for psychologists. All the, the things that... So that's why we have to be very gentle, very delicate, but we have to also, give people courage to move on in a responsible way. Obviously not to do things irresponsibly, but sometimes if people feed into the fear, and I'm not saying that there wasn't, something significant, and many, many people unfortunately lost their lives, and it was something very, a very significant thing, but we have to know, how do we proceed, how do we move on, and what's considered, safe and what's not considered safe. And some people just freeze. they just freeze and they can't, you know, move on. And you know, and people have all types of, you know, so whatever fears people had, this has added a whole new dimension to the world that we never saw. So we have to, in a responsible way. That's why I like to, if someone comes to me with the question of, you know, going to the mikveh, and there's a question, you know, I speak to the doctor to understand the situation and understand what could be done or what couldn't be done for this particular situation. But we always, you know, have to do our homework, you know, to make sure we're giving the best halachic advice and the best, you know, medical, you know. There's a doctor in Brooklyn, Dr. Norman Fertel. He's an OBG, so he always says to me, you know, you're the rabbi, so your domain is halacha, my domain is medicine, and we know not to switch domains. You know, you have your domain, I have my domain, and we're not there. I'm not there to give halachic advice, and you're not there to give medical advice. So, you know, so that's why, you know, Rabbanim has to consult with doctors to understand the whole situation, especially as it relates to mikveh and you know, and sometimes, you know, if somebody, I told you I had a particular Talmud of mine who had this congregant who was totally frozen, but I sent her to a certain Rebbetzin who knows about a certain mikveh. I told you that it was, the waters changed on a regular basis, and she would be the first one or the second one of the night. So, which one of the doctors, you know, was, you know, said that it would be much better, you know, because usually in the medical world, whatever. So that's the, you know, but it has to be done with a lot of seichel and a lot of concern and sensitivity. That the mikveh is supposed to foster, you know, relationships, shalom bayis, and this, and it shouldn't be something that is causing people, you know, excess stress. You know, the Ramban was the first one, and the Ramban wrote a sefer, Hilchas Ramban and Hilchas Nida. In other words, you see, the Rambam was like the only Rishon that we have wrote a halachic book on everything. That's the Mishnah Torah. But other Rishonim, besides they wrote Perushim on the Gemara, they wrote, like the Ritva wrote a sefer on Hilchas Brachas, Halachas, like Halacha A, Halacha B, Halacha, you know. So the Ramban did that on Hilchas Nida. Hilchas Nida la Ramban. And in the end of the thing, he has a whole thing about dealing with OCD. In other words, you thought OCD is a new thing, that, you know, in 20th century, OCD, everyone's OCD. The Ramban spoke about it, you know, about how to get ready for the mikveh, and then you did what you're supposed to do, and now you go, and you did the halacha, and you can't, like, constantly be second-guessing yourself. And for a Rav, it's very important. I have a sense of when a person's calling, whether it's a real shayla, or like Rav Barbani says, a lot of times you can tell this person's just nerves. It's not a real shayla. And a Rav is attuned to people, will be able to, a good Rav will be able to fine-tune and pick up when it's a real shayla or it's just like an OCD and, you know, nerves. And that's an important way, because the way they have to respond to a person. But it's interesting, the Ramban in Hilchas Nida, you know, way before the modern-day doctors of today who spoke about OCD, he spoke about OCD and that idea. There was a psychologist in Muncie, Dr. Greenwald. In fact, in the Mishpacha magazine, they just had a write-up of him. He was Nifter, and he co-authored a sefer with the Stipler about shailas that people gave him, and he discussed with the Stipler about halachic OCD. You know, when people, men looking at their tefillin to make sure it's perfectly, or people washing their hands and constantly washing and rewashing, you know, all these type of things of, you know, that cause people stress. Judaism is supposed to be a religion that gives us simcha and drachad drachay noam. Not supposed to be that we dread, you know, performing this mitzvah because it's going to cause us, you know, nervousness and tsar, and you know, religion is supposed. Our religion is not a religion of torture and a religion of being morose. It's a religion of derachad nachay noam, of a pleasant life in a pleasant way. And if we see that we're not, that religion is not doing that for us, then we have to consult with a bigger expert in Yiddishkeit to tell us where we're going wrong. What's the area that we're missing that's causing, you know, our Yiddishkeit to be a burden. You know, and that's something that we have to always make sure for ourselves, and to give that over to our children. To give that over to our children. That Yiddishkeit emphasizes simcha, it emphasizes rachad darachay noam. You know, the Meshech Chachma has the famous opinion, the famous comment. He said, the mitzvah pruvu is on the man, not on the woman. Because the woman, she goes through so much pain. So the Torah couldn't have made a mitzvah on the woman. It's on the man. Because for the woman, it's not always drachad darachay noam. But, okay, but whatever it may be, well, the Gemara says in Sukkah, the Gemara, which of the dalad meaning you have to take? Even though the Torah says it, but the Torah's not clear what exactly it means. So the Gemara has a possibility. Does it mean this? Does it mean this? Does it mean this? And one of the possibilities for what a lulav is a thorn bush or something like that. And the Gemara says, that can't be the mitzvah. The Torah would never give us a mitzvah to take something that has thorns and just hold it. It just can't be. And therefore, the Gemara rejects that as a possibility. But and the same thing for all areas of halacha. We're talking specifically here about the mikvah. But all areas of halacha, you know, and all areas of interpersonal relationships regarding Yiddishkeit and how to help bring people closer to Yiddishkeit, you know, is the more we show the beauty, like Rabbi Yudin always speaks about, showing the beauty of Yiddishkeit as opposed to making things difficult in a very morose, bitter way. You know, Rav Moshe, you know, when I was in college in YU, I took a class in Yiddish speaking. I took 2 years of it. And we went, Dr. Alan Hoffman, he should be well, was our professor. And we went to the Yiddish theater. He knew the play script better than the actors. He was asking, why did you say this? Doesn't the script say that? You know, he knew it very well. And the name of the play, the Yiddish theater, was Shver zu sein Yid. It's hard to be a Jew. That was the famous play, Shver zu sein Yid. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said that was the motto of the immigrants that came from Europe to America. And he said, because they had that attitude, that's why so many of their children intermarried and or just gave it up. I don't know if you said intermarried per se, but they gave it up. Because if it's Shver zu sein Yid, so I don't want it. You know, so Rav David Feinstein said, from his father, he says, you have to say Gring zu sein Yid. It's easy to be a Jew. You know, it should be something that, you know, and that's the, like my mother always tells me, if you love what you're doing, you don't work a day in your life. And that's what the Or Chaim HaKadosh says. Lo ra on Parshas Balak. Lo ra amol bi Yisrael. He doesn't see people toiling. What do you mean he doesn't see people toiling? The tzaddikim are always toiling. But he says they're enjoying it so much, even though they're toiling it, you don't feel that they're toiling it. And that's what Yiddishkeit should be about. It should be something, you know, the original source of eating milchik on Shavuos, cheesecake and all these things is the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Dvash v'cholov tachas l'shonech. From that pasuk, the Torah, the milk and honey under your tongue, because the Torah has to be like sweet. If it's something that we just, it's just hard, then there's something, there has to be something wrong. I'm not saying that everything is posh and simple, but if things that just seem, then you should go to a person who knows more about Yiddishkeit than you and see where are you going wrong. If Yiddishkeit is causing you depression or nervousness or things like that. And that's the tefillah b'mikvah, and that's the preparation. That's all the mitzvahs that we have. All the mitzvahs that we have should be besimcha and shouldn't bring difficulties. And the life situations regarding it shouldn't be. And if it is, we have to ask somebody, where are we going wrong? Where are we going wrong? And that's the idea. Okay, Rabbosai, I'd like to thank again Dr. and Mrs. Schechter and all the other anonymous sponsors for helping sponsor this shiur and last week's shiur. And Dr. Schechter, Mrs. Schechter sponsored, and many of the people passed away in COVID-19. And then the Shomer should have an aliyah. And always, Rabbi Dallinger is always so gracious to invite me. And I say, I miss the Rhode Island hospitality. You know, just to see it on the screen is one thing, but I still want a rain check to be able to spend the Shabbos when things get back to normal, whatever that'll be, to be able to spend the Shabbos. You know, usually I give the shiurim at the meals, so I should have brought my dinner to the screen here, and you know, have a Zoom meal. You know, etc. But you should all be well, and it's always a pleasure to see you all. And thank you, Brishus Harav, Rav Dallinger. And if anyone has any particular questions, they can always contact me. You can get my contact information from Rabbi Dallinger or from Dr. Schechter. And you should all be well. You should all have simchas. We should share in simchas with each other in the future, in good time, in good health. We should all be good, and we should realize that Yiddishkeit is dvash v'cholov tachas ulshonech. So when you're eating that cheesecake, this siyantif, have that in mind, and be well, and I'm always available to come again on Shabbos, on Zoom, anything. It's always a pleasure to share Torah with this community in Providence, Rhode Island. And
Simon, thank you. The pleasure is ours, and you've been the sugar. The Torah is whatever. You've added the sweetness, and so we thank you for that. And yes, the invitation is extended. As soon as we can again safely gather, we'll look forward to scheduling an in-person visit with food and song and all the things that we can't quite do over Zoom. But in the interim, it's been really great to connect, and so we're very grateful.
Okay, I'm glad we were able to you know, get a date. I mean, it wasn't simple. We had one date, another date, Chag HaSmicha, all these different ways that we were trying to navigate. Okay? Hashkocha had it that we did it this way this year. Okay, you should be well, Dr. Schechter and your family, Rabbi Dallinger, and everyone else who's listening on. Rina, Dani, whoever.
We have a bunch of Facebook is very active. I see there's a live feed. We're doing it also on Facebook at the same time. So there's all these people there.
Okay, be well, and we'll be in touch. Thank you, Kol Tov. Have a good night.